that doesn't have to be like this. All we need to do is make sure we keep talking.
Well, that's what we're trying to create, simply magic. It's as simple as that. Try to create magic, try to move people, move their hearts a little bit.
The ring of the division bell had begun. What do you want from me?
There will always be people who feel that Pink Floyd finished when Roger left, just as there are people who feel Pink Floyd ended when Syd Barrett left. What do you want from
me? Hello, I'm David Gilmour.
And I'm Nick Mason of Pink Floyd, and you're listening to The Division Bell.
One of the most memorable afternoons I can recall ever was in spring 1994 when I broadcast my Dallas-Fort Worth radio show live while flying the Pink Floyd blimp. It was an enormous psychedelic painted blimp flying then in a cross-country trek to announce Pink Floyd's new album, The Division Bell, their first, it turns out, in 7 years, and the subsequent tour. Musically, Pink Floyd's The Division Bell featured melodic yet melancholy ballads, majestic instrumentals, high drama, and the band's atmospheric ensemble playing. Lyrically, The Division Bell is a meditation on what happens when humans fail to communicate, the isolation of individual awareness, the inexhaustible desire for communion, and finally, the very real possibility of transcending it all through shimmering moments of grace. I began by asking Pink Floyd singer, songwriter, lead guitarist David Gilmour about the meaning of the title, The Division Bell.
It comes from a line in a song, High Hopes, contains a line about the division bell.
What is a division bell?
The division bell is a bell that rings in Westminster, in the Houses of Parliament, and it also rings in the apartments of many of the members of Parliament. And it is a bell that rings to summon all the members of Parliament to go to the House of Commons and to divide into yeas and nays to vote on the issues. Because often in debates in the Houses of Parliament, the members of Parliament are not necessarily all there. Some of them have already made up their minds about what they want to do or are just going to follow the party line. And so they may be sitting at home in an apartment. There's a sort of catchment area around the Houses of Parliament where, within a certain distance, where if you are a member of Parliament, they install this bell in your apartment. They get to the point where they finish debating, they ring this bell. Everyone that's in the area comes down. If you're all the Tories and all the Labour people, all come down to vote one way or the other. It's a division bell. It divides the yeses from the noes.
Of years, mankind lived just like the animals. And something happened which unleashed the power of our imagination. We learned to talk.
There's a silence surrounding me. I can't seem to think straight.
Make sure we keep talking. then make sure you keep typing.
Is that voice?
Well, it's not a real voice. It's the voice of Stephen Hawking, who is the professor who wrote this book called A Brief History of Time. It's a huge, huge popular book. He's suffering from motor neurone disease. He's in a wheelchair. He can't speak. And this is a voice synthesizer computer thing that has been built for him. I think he can only move one finger, a tiny, tiny little bit, and he works it all with that. I saw an advert on the television in England for a telephone company, and his voice was on this advertisement. This advertisement nearly made me weep. I've never had that with a television advertisement for the commercial on the television. This is the most powerful piece of television advertising that I've ever seen in my life, and I thought it was fascinating, and I contacted the company that made it and asked if I could borrow the voice track from it, this voiceover track from it, which I did, which is this voice synthesizer thing, and I applied it to one of the pieces of music we already had. And I suppose you could say that, you know, there's a theme throughout the album which involves communication, and pretty much all the songs are connected to the theme of communication in some way or another.
Pink Floyd's The Division Bell album benefited from the spectacular success of the 1987 Momentary Lapse of Reason comeback album and tour, the first following the acrimonious departure of Pink Floyd co-founder Roger Waters. However, that resounding success was certainly no guarantee for The Division Bell's reception, according to Pink Floyd drummer Nick Mason.
Success doesn't actually alleviate It doesn't alleviate criticism. Unfortunately, there is no direct. That would be a wonderful thing if criticism was cancelled out by success. Unfortunately, that is not the case. I think, however successful you are, however long you've been doing it, most performers actually can be cut to the quick by criticism, and can quite often. I think critics sometimes underestimate how hurtful and how easily they can actually cut through. You know, there are always people who are going to find what we do a sort of, I suppose you could almost say, unnatural, and it will never work for them because it in some ways goes against the rules of rock and roll about how real rock music should be, which may be it should be in a bar somewhere, or it should be where you can see the sweat on everyone, or you have personalities, or whatever.
But I thought it was about also breaking rules. One of the things that we all love about Pink Floyd is that the first thing that goes is the rules.
Yeah.
The boundaries that restrict thought and imagination is the first thing that you throw out.
Well, yes, but I mean, there are all sorts of rules, aren't there, that some are spoken, some are unspoken, and some are complete nonsense, but that we allow to sort of roll along.
That's a good word. We allow it.
There will always be people who feel that Pink Floyd finished when Roger left, just as there are people who feel Pink Floyd ended when Syd Barrett left. And you can't change that. For them, that is the case. And much as I would love to be able to sort of convince them otherwise, I understand that that's the case. There's also a sort of concept that bands have to be. People would like to believe that they are made up of a sort of groups of lovable mop tops. It's the sort of the Beatles as they were in 1967. That's really our sort of ideal view of a band. And of course, it's not true. This goes back to the elements that make up a band. Generally, there's an enormous amount of conflict and tension in a band. It's considered, when it's reported, it's considered to be scandal almost. But it's something that is allowed to drift on as a sort of concept of how rock music should be. But of course, it's complete nonsense.
Up next, a rare vocal from the distinctive voice of Pink Floyd keyboard player Richard Wright, plus a tribute to Rick from David Gilmour and Nick Mason. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and for more Rockstar interviews, certainly visit inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with David Gilmour and Nick Mason for Pink Floyd's The Division Bell.
Hello, I'm David Gilmour.
And I'm Nick Mason of Pink Floyd, and you're listening to The Division Bell.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm Redbeard with Pink Floyd singer, songwriter, guitarist David Gilmour.
How has the writing and recording for The Division Bell differed from the way the band created the last five studio albums?
Well, you know the history. It's in the last few years, we've been through all our sort of ups and downs, our splits and all that stuff. Rick left, rejoined, Roger left, didn't rejoin. The album since, say, Animals was more an album where Roger and I were taking command of it, and it was becoming more down to things that were written at home by people, The Wall even more so. The Momentary Lapse of Reason album was recorded again by... It wasn't a terribly cooperative event with everyone really putting their maximum in. And this album, I guess I'd say for the first time since maybe the Wish You Were Here album, is a more joint effort than any album we've done since then.
Keyboard player Richard Wright, who passed away in 2008, made significant contributions on this album, co-writing five songs and even singing. Here's Rick with me in the studio.
And we made certain decisions. For example, Momentary Lapse of Reason, I was involved with it virtually near the sort of the last quarter of making the album, and just putting in a couple of Hammond tracks down or whatever. Nick, myself and Dave were involved right from the beginning in Britannia Row, just playing together. And out of that, the tracks came, and decisions like Nick will play all the drums, I will play all the keyboards, and John Karen came in as a programmer and played some of the keyboards, but it was to get the band feeling back. And for that reason, I think, as you say, the fans will like it more. I think we're kind of thinking of Wish You Were Here, which happens to be my favourite album.
So you think you can tell heaven from hell, blue skies from pain? Can you tell a green field from a cold steel rail, a smile from a veil? Do you think you can tell? They get you to train your heroes for ghosts, hot ashes for trees, hot air for a cool breeze, cold comfort for change. Did you exchange a walk on part in the war for a leap?
you were here.
Tell me what, in your opinion, makes that one special, and any parallels that you see to the Division Bell.
It's hard to say. It just happens to be the album that, for me, just from the moment it starts till it finishes, it flows. The songs flow into each other, and it's just a wonderful feeling in it. The intention of this album was to try and recreate a band feeling, which hadn't happened on Moments You Lapse of Reason. I wasn't on Final Cut. I was on The Wall, but again, it wasn't a band thing. And we wanted both Dave and Nick, I can speak for them, I think, and myself, really liked the feeling we had on Dark Side of the Moon and Wish You Were Here.
Thank you.
Take It Back comes from 1994's The Division Bell by Pink Floyd.
Sort of my favourite album, I suppose I would say, was the Wish You Were Here album. And, you know, the actual process of sitting together in a room with several musicians and actually playing, performing together from nothing is a very interesting, exciting sort of process where we all contributed together. And that was what started the album off. It gave us our kickstart. So the start of the album came from a more joint effort than any album that we've made since Wish You Were Here.
Is The Division Bell particularly sweet for you personally?
It was fulfilling because I wrote on it, and I wrote with Dave on it, and I sang on it for the first time. I mean, a lead vocal since Dark Side of the Moon. So that was very fulfilling.
Good.
Because, you see, I have to say, I've never, ever had any confidence in my voice, but I wrote this song, Wearing the Inside Out, and so I had to sing it. And it was quite interesting because I hadn't really sung and went in and did a track. I'd rehearsed it with Anthony Moore, who wrote the lyrics, but I basically hadn't really sung for 20 years and did one take, and Bob Ezrin said, OK, that's it. But it's a song that really suits my voice. I don't have a versatile voice, OK? I'm not a Dave. There are certain ways of singing I can do, like the choruses of Time, Us and Them, or the chorus of Time. I have a voice that can do certain ways of singing. And Wearing the Inside Out, because I wrote it, would suit my voice. I couldn't sing Money, for example.
Thank you.
Written and sung by keyboard player Rick Wright, who passed away in 2008, that's The Lazy Languid, Wearing the Inside Out, from 1994's The Division Bell by Pink Floyd. Here's David Gilmour.
Rick's got a very good voice, you know. He's an instantly recognizable voice, you know. You can't miss Rick's voice, and I've always wanted to use it, but you have to find the right place, the right vehicle for him, and this is substantially his song. Anthony Moore was working with us again on this album, and he came up with the idea for that one, and Rick sang it. What can I say? It's very nice, very lovely piece, and everyone who listens to it, you know, that I know in listening to it, is goes, God, it's that voice that used to be, you know, that used to be a part of the Pink Floyd sound and hasn't been so much lately, and it's kind of a thrill for people, and it's a good song.
Pink Floyd drummer Nick Mason.
The sound is quite often, it's not necessarily only to do with what the solo instruments are. It is to do with an overall sound. And Rick's contribution at that level is immeasurable. And you forget it until you hear it. And he's an extraordinary character anyway, because a lot of what he does is totally natural. I mean, if you ask him to sort of, if you explain what you want, he might have some difficulty with it. If you just leave him to do it, it just comes straight out. But there are certainly bits and pieces on the record that were done by simply leaving Rick in the room with the tape recorder running, and just while he was in, he just played. And it was a bit like panning for gold. You know, you could then take this stuff and shake it, and there were the golden nuggets.
Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and you can find a lot more from Pink Floyd at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with David Gilmour and Nick Mason for Pink Floyd's The Division Bell.
Hello, I'm David Gilmour.
And I'm Nick Mason of Pink Floyd, and you're listening to The Division Bell.
Thanks again, guys. I'm Redbeard. Since the release of The Division Bell in spring 1994, singer-songwriter-guitarist David Gilmour married lyricist Polly Sampson, who co-wrote five of the songs on the album. When I reminded Gilmour that during hours of one-on-one interview just prior to The Division Bell's release, that he had failed to mention Samson's contribution to the album, nor their imminent marriage. And here's how David Gilmour reacted.
Well, that shows what a bastard I am, doesn't it? Well, friends, I married her.
I think probably it's just my own ego and vanity that worrying that I was getting to rely on her too much that made me not admit how much she'd done within it. I mean, it's all written there in the credits, so it's not exactly hidden, but I don't know if I was being discreet. I think I was just being less than honest. Well, there is that element of unwanted by the general public women in well-known men's lives, you know. And Yoko and Linda McCartney, amongst others, came in for plenty of shit. Polly is, I became my girlfriend in 1992 and my wife in 1994. We have children together. She was a writer before I met her. She's had novels and books of short stories out and was a journalist for a long time and is a skilled writer, you know, and she encouraged me on the Division Bell. I was feeling less than full of inspiration and started putting more and more into the songs that I'd started writing already, like High Hopes and so on, and became really my sort of full-time lyric writing partner as we went through that album. But our relationship wasn't that old at that stage, so I guess I was uneasy about making it sound too permanent or relying on it too much. You never know how things are going to go on, but it has gone on, and here we are, and that partnership between me and her is, both in life and in art, music, is still about the most important thing in my life.
While the seams of life and the sea lifelong friend Nick Mason pays tribute to his late bandmate in Pink Floyd, Rick Wright, who passed away in 2008. How long did you know Rick?
Well, since 1962.
Oh, my gosh.
I met Rick when we were students together at the Regent Street Polytechnic, and he was going to be an architect. And Rick being an architect was probably one of the worst concepts ever invented. I mean, Roger and I were pushing it, but Rick definitely was not destined for it. And after the first year, was off in a music college. But I'd known Rick for a very, very long time. And of course, it's people like that that you miss. Forget the fact that he was part of the band. He'd actually been someone I just knew, you know, far beyond, longer than I'd known my children or my wife or anything else. So very sad.
David Gilmour gives us an honest, candid assessment of the changes in Pink Floyd since the release of this album.
Well, no regrets. I was in two minds about it before doing it. In fact, I initially turned it down because I thought it would distract from the project I've been working on, and wasn't unaware of the sort of hornet's nest that would get opened up by doing it. But, you know, there was something much more important at stake, so obviously it was better to get in there and do it and deal with the certain amount of rubbish at the same time. It's very good personally for me and Roger to be able to put a bit of the bad vibes that have gone on behind us and get up there and play a gig. So that was fun. And I'm very pleased in the end that I did it. Together with that, I mean, it sort of served as closure on that period of my life. And I'm very, very sort of happy and satisfied musically, artistically, with my whole career within Pink Floyd, in the early days with Roger, and in the latter years too. You know, I've had a great time, a great opportunity to do pretty much whatever I wanted in all that. I do feel now it's time for something different. I have a different partnership in life and love, as well as in music, with Polly, who's a great writer. I feel very musically, artistically satisfied by where I am right now. I have stepped out of it, and I expect I will stay stepped out of it. My happiness and feeling of musical, artistic fulfillment is satisfied by the partnership that I'm working in now. I don't see that my life would be made happier or more fulfilled artistically by going back.
is glowing behind us. To a glimpse of how green it was on the other side. Steps taken forwards, but sleepwalking back again. Dragged by the force of some inner tide.
The
I asked David Gilmour how he felt about Pink Floyd's The Division Bell being their swan song.
Oh, I feel pretty good about it, to be honest. I think I was listening to High Hopes as I was driving here this morning and thinking, God, that really stands the test of time. It sits well in our canon. Yeah, I'm very proud of it. I think it was a good way to quit. You know, to me, Pink Floyd has been a wonderful life, but it's passed. It's had its moment and it's passed. You know, Rick Wright's now dead. We can't recreate it. We can't. It would be pointless to attempt it. And it's for me time to say goodbye to it.
It's been a strange 10 years for me because an enormous amount of people of my friends seem to have died early in the last 10 years, and it's a strange and difficult thing, you know. So the passing of people, many people, death and the mortality is something that I have often thought about in the past, and I've had more reason than normally to think about in the past few years. I mean, my mother died a couple of years ago. My sister died a few years ago. Lots of photographs of people at my 50th birthday party, full of people who are no longer around. Enjoy them while you can.
This program is certainly dedicated to the memories of Pink Floyd manager Steve O'Rourke and Richard Wright. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, David Gilmour and Nick Mason. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2014, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song, Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter, @RedbeardRocks. And you can check out more at inthestudio.net.